All right, as Nate just said, 7:05. Hey, guess what? It's 7:06. Welcome into the drive. Dave, Nate, Matt, George, the vacationing Katie Christensen is, well, vacationing. 339-1140, 1-800-920-1140. Alex Pavlovich, who writes Giants for CSN Bay Area. He's going to join us from Philadelphia in about 30 minutes, 7:35, to talk about all things big and small with those Giants and the awful debut of the Fresh Prince last night, Will Smith. Dear Lord, that was horrible. There was a subset to that game, though, that I wanted to get to. Bob Davidson was the home plate umpire, and he stopped down the game in order to eject a fan. This was a heckling fan who apparently, well, not apparently. I'll let you know what the Davidson pool report said. When he was asked what happened with said fan, Davidson said, and I quote, "All of a sudden, this guy starts yelling, 'You suck.' You could tell he was drunk. So, all right, 'You suck' isn't bad. Then he kept it up for two hitters completely. Then the third hitter after the first pitch, he says, quote, 'I own property on 69th Street. You could come over and suck.' That's when I turned around and said, 'You know what? Get rid of this guy. You could have your wife, your girlfriend, your kids there. They buy tickets. They don't have to come here and listen to that.' That's exactly what he said to throw him out." There was a report that slurs were used. Bob Davidson was asked about that. He said, "All I heard him say was suck. I didn't hear any N-bombs or anything like that. What he said about 69th Street, that's when I turned around and had the guy get rid of him. I didn't know why security just didn't do that on their own. There were kids there, young girls there. And then somebody mentioned him getting applause, and he said, 'Yeah, people cheered me, which is unusual in this town for me.'" So Bob Davidson ejects a fan, and that just kind of begs the question for me, what is the line there for a fan, and what rights do you have, should you have, to express yourself at a game before you are A, warned, and be ejected?
Well, this is kind of an interesting one with Bob Davidson, also known as Bakken Bob Davidson, by the way. Did you know that, just as a little background on him, his career ejection rate of 4.4% is more than twice the major league average for umpires?
And he's done this before. This is not the first time he's ejected a fan.
Well, it's in August of 1989, Dave, Bob Davidson ejected Yuppie, the Montreal Expos mascot, after repeated complaints from Tommy Lasorda because Yuppie'd been dancing on the dugout. So, you know, Bob Davidson's got a bit of a quick trigger.
And now Yuppie's dead.
Yeah, I know. The whole franchise is dead.
Exactly.
I mean, thanks a lot, Bob. My point being, with all of that being said, that I'm all right in this situation with Bob tossing this guy. It sounds like this guy was an a-hole. And I know, like, we could get into the whole existential, like, hey, who are you to, you know, how do we decide who's what, whatever. The umpire's got authority to do it. That guy was being a jerk. I think we can all agree on that. Sound like that guy was being a drunk a-hole. I'm fine with the umpire exercising his authority and saying, you know what, get this guy out of here.
I'm 100% okay with it. I don't know. I recognize.
Couldn't tell you specifically where I draw the line, although it seemed like Bob had made a good choice.
I think so. And I think when you buy a ticket, even though my preference may not be lean that way, I think when you buy a ticket, you have a right to boo. Mm-hmm. You have a right to express yourself. You have a right to put a bag on your head or hold up a sign or whatever. I for example, going to Kings games, I have many times sat next to. You learn which team's fans, on average, have the most obnoxious ones. The L.A. fans are can be terribly obnoxious. But to be fair, you could probably have a Bucks fan there that, if you got the right guy, is going to be a horrible fan. I get uncomfortable when I start looking around at kids and they give their parents kind of a quizzical look, and it starts getting really uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. And I get uncomfortable. I've seen, and I've participated in, where a parent will say, "Hey, could you hold the swearing down?" Or, hey, could you, you know, I got my kid here." And the fan will generally turn around and say something. Either the fan will say, "Oh, I'm sorry," and then pick it up 5 minutes later because they're hammered. Or the fan will say, "Hey, I paid for my ticket. Okay, you know, don't bring your kids to the game." And I don't know why, but I put the value on a kid being at a game more than I put the value on an adult being at a game, and that's probably the wrong way to think. But I want the game to be more geared towards the impressionable ones coming up and becoming sports fans than I do dumbass, schmedium-wearing, double-fisted, beer-drinking douchebag that feels it necessary for him to... It's like, what are you doing anyways? Like,
right, what's your plan? Like, you know, buying that ticket, yeah, you do have your right to boo, Dave, and you do have your right.
Sure.
But it doesn't give you the right to be a public nuisance. And
that's a great way to put it.
And while I don't want my sporting events to be turned into some sort of G-rated family affair, I also understand that people do have their kids there, right? So I'm never going to have, like, the perfectly clean mouth. And in fact, sometimes, you know what? You might have to say, hey, dude, can you watch it? And I'll be like, oh, my God. Like, I didn't,
right.
'Cause you've called me out on that before. It's
yes.
like, I didn't even realize.
Yes.
But, you know, like I said, I'm not going to, like, church it up or anything, but just be aware, have a little bit of courtesy of the people around you, and this guy was being a nuisance.
It's the booze, in most cases, I think, that does it to the people when you become, in fact, I remember the time I did, and I'll defend Nate here. Nate, we were at a, I think last time we were at a restaurant,
mm-hmm.
and Nate had had a couple pops. And you were very passionate about a subject we were talking about, and it was, you know, F here, F that, F this, F that. You know, as hey, listen, we all drop F-bombs, but you were doing it at a volume, and then I could see behind you the mother and child.
The antenna kind of perk up.
Yeah, right. And I let you know mainly because I figured, hey, if you knew about this, you'd really rather. So it's like a booger in your nose. Mm-hmm. Please tell me if there's something in my teeth. So I don't know. 339-1140, 1-800-920-1140. We have calls coming in. I think it is an interesting question as to where is the line there. If I'm at a King, and I use Kings games as my reference.
Right.
Of course. If I'm at a Kings game, I'll tell you one thing. If you're screaming obscenities, I think that's a line. That's mm-hmm. a line. If I don't need 9-year-old kids hearing you tell Kevin Durant to go F his mother. You know, that's I'm sorry. And obviously some, I think, that should be a warning and then an ejection. But then there's also things if you get hate speech, slurry, that's instant ejection.
Right.
See you later.
Not necessary.
339-1140.
Word police. PC police are coming for you.
Right. Exactly. And I don't know. It's tough, man.
Just don't be a jerk. I know that's very vague,
it's
but
a great statement. Just don't be a freak. Pretend your mom's next to you. Well, in some cases, maybe don't pretend your mom's next to you for some of you out there. We'll take a break. We'll come back. We'll talk about this. Again, Alex Pavlovich coming up at 7:30. So that's right around the corner. We also have some sound from Raiders and Niners camp as well to get to in the next segment. On the Drive, Sports 1140 KHDK. Alex Pavlovich is in Philadelphia. He covers the San Francisco Giants for CSN. He's going to join us in 10 minutes. We'll try to figure out what the hell is going on with the Gigantics.
Yeah.
They debuted Will Smith last night. Did not go well.
Mm.
Bob Davidson ejected a fan in the game from yelling, amongst other things, "You suck." We were just talking during the last segment. What is the line you draw? I was thinking about it, Nate. I think the equivalent of fans saying, "I buy my ticket, I have a right to boo and be loud and stand up and scream, even if I'm not shouting obscenities." I guess the equivalent to me or an equivalent is guy in the fast lane on the freeway going 55 or 65 and saying, "I pay my taxes, this is the speed limit, screw you, go around me."
Mm-hmm.
You're technically right, I guess. Like, you're technically right by the letter of the law, but you're still a douchebag.
Yeah, that's better, because I was going to say it reminds me a lot of people that misunderstand the First Amendment. But I think you're a little bit closer.
Yeah, let's go with mine.
Yeah, well, it's like when you think that gives you the
right
to just say anything.
No, you're right.
You know, or like what do you think? Someone disagrees with you in a meeting at work, you can have them arrested. Like, that's, you know. So, but yours is a lot more accurate.
No,
like, you're not
technically
breaking a law. You're just being an idiot and
a jerk. It's like Twitter. It's like social media. Can you go on and create a Twitter account and can you just abuse somebody? Yeah, sure you can. But isn't there a part of you deep down late at night when you look in the mirror and you go, "Dude, really? This is who I am? I would do none of this in real life.
What am I doing?
What the hell am I doing?" Jerry, you're on the Drive.
Good morning, guys.
Morning.
Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
along the lines where the fans pay for that umpire's salary. The fans pay for everybody's salary. They can pretty much pay whatever they want unless they're threatening someone.
What about swearing?
I mean, there's no – where's the line for good taste? What's good taste with somebody else is not good taste with others. But I want to get to a bigger issue, and that's how the news – it'll pan back with the camera, and it'll show a coach cussing, but they'll keep out the volume, or even more than that.
Wait, what? You kind of broke up there. They'll pan away from a coach and show him swearing? Is that what you
said? Yeah, show him cussing, but they won't turn on the volume. But I got a bigger problem. I mean, I go to some Kings games, and luckily my brother's company's got tickets that are really close. And I get to listen to NBA players cuss all game. All game. I got a bigger issue with that, guys, and I think that should be addressed.
You know what? I can't. That is a real... That's a really good point by Jerry, and that's a really tough problem, is a fan pays to go see the game, and he's looked poorly on for swearing, which I would look poor.
This
it's
not about swearing. It's right. About, like I said, it's about being a public nuisance.
Right.
All right? Bob Davidson got cheered when he tossed this guy because everyone in that section thought, this guy is being a jerk. Can someone do something about this?
Yes.
And the umpire has the authority to do that.
But if you've got a fan who's, let's say, in the third row, and DeMarcus Cousins is at the free throw line, D'Angelo Russell, it's a Lakers game, is at the free throw line. He's a Kings fan. Let's turn it around. And he's saying, I think there's a difference between getting up and saying, you suck, D'Angelo, why, or being funny, or you think you're mm-hmm. funny. Why don't you Snapchat your free throws or something? There's a difference, I think, between that and saying, hey, D'Angelo, you effing suck. Your girl's a hooker, whatever.
Right.
But then you've got players, and Jerry brings up a good point. If you've sat anywhere near the players before, it's a player misses a free throw. He's screaming at the top of his lungs, the F-bomb in a lot of cases. Or you see him yelling and screaming at refs or at other players or whatever. And so is it different when a player screams it than a fan? And what are you going to do? You going to fine players for swearing?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know happening. Obviously, there is a big difference, and there's a reason that you can't. There are obviously gray areas. That example you just gave, shouting during a free throw. Yeah, you sprinkle a couple F-bombs in there. It is a lot worse. But if there's 17,000 people screaming and you can't hear it, right? You can't just make hard and fast rules. And it's also, like you said, different if you're being funny. And that, of course, is subjective.
Right.
But isn't that the whole story? Like, we can't sit here and pretend that you don't get special privileges when you do things better than everyone else. So if you're, if you're swearing but you're funny, you're going to get a little bit longer of a leash. That's life.
The problem is that every drunk person heckling at a game ever has thought that they were basically Robin Williams and George Carlin rolled into one.
Of course.
They think, and you can tell because they're the ones that say something outlandishly stupid, and then they start laughing and turning around and making sure you're laughing with them.
Now, so I guess the real question is here, are you okay with the officials, umpires, whatever, having the authority to do stuff like that? Not where's the line? Because to me, it comes down to the line of whoever it is that's making the decision. Yeah, that person's not funny. They're just being rude. Get them out of here.
I think it's security's job. If security's not doing their job, which in this case apparently they weren't, and Davidson sees that this is a nuisance, Bob Davidson, you go for it. I like what the Kings do and a lot of teams are doing right now. I think this should be mandatory in all major sports where you can text mm-hmm. a number and report somebody. You give the section, the seat number. Because here's the thing. If you're upset at somebody heckling and you get up and you go tell a security guard and then you come back and sit down, you better hope that that guy's thrown out, because if he's just warned, the guy's going to know that you tattled on him.
Right.
I love the ability to tell a security guard via text. No, it's anonymous. Say, hey, you might want to watch this guy. And then security can come over and look at the person and judge for themselves what the proper, if any, punishment's going to be. That should be standard everywhere.
That really just should start kicking out obnoxious fans in general.
Or do you have a family section? Or do you adopt a family section where you section. Do you have a family section where
called
you
the upper level?
You have more hardcore rules. Yeah, that's called section 223. Exactly. We'll take a break. We'll come back. Alex Pavlovich, he writes Giants for CSN. He's in Philadelphia for the series, the Giants versus Phillies. We'll talk to him about that wacky baseball team next on the Drive, Sports 1140 KHDK. It's exactly what it was. To, if you didn't see the clip, it's a great clip. Joey Votto, it's almost like a Steve Bartman moment. He's going towards the foul line. He reaches into the stands to try to catch the foul ball. A fan has his glove up. They collide a little bit. They're not violently, but they collide gloves. Ball gets dropped. Votto turns to the fan, some dude in the front row, and he grabs the logo part of this guy's jersey, shirt, whatever, and stares at the fat, you know, staring at the Reds logo, and then kind of pops it back on the guy and shakes his head and walks away. And that's exactly what Votto's saying is, bro, hey, we're on the same team. Thanks a lot. And he's a red ass. Joey Votto is a notorious red ass. Mm-hmm. We were talking about fans earlier with Bob Davidson throwing the guy out from at the Phillies-Giants game. But here's another one. I've always kind of felt bad for the fan because when you have a – Joey Votto catches 70,000 balls a year. Mm-hmm. Okay, he's used to it. When you're a fan in the stands, and we don't know, maybe this guy won the lottery or somebody gave him a ticket. We don't know how often he sits in the front row. But when you get a foul ball at a baseball game, if you've ever had one hit in your vicinity.
It's coming right at you, man.
And everything else, like you see people holding their infants with one hand
right.
And with their right.
You're the fielder. That out counts, right? I mean,
you have the opportunity in baseball if you catch this ball. You get to keep it and take it home. And most people will write, I've caught one foul ball in my life. It was at a River Cats game. I caught it. It's still on a stand at my house with the game, the date, who hit it. Now, come on. Nobody cares about that right. Other than me. But for me, it was a moment in time when, damn it, I was a part of the game. And in this situation, there is some sort of a fun thing that happens to grown adults at games, whenever you have an opportunity. For example, we'll go to a Kings game, and I'm not going to call—I won't call out any sponsors or anything. I won't embarrass anyone. But let's just say that occasionally during the course of the year at a Kings game, there will be some sort of thing that let's take the mini balls, the mini Kings balls, for example. Those are great, okay? And you could go to the Kings store, I think, and buy one for $5.
Mm-hmm.
I see,
or
when the dancers and everybody goes during the breaks to throw the balls in the stands. It's a great thing. It's mm-hmm. a great thing, and I'm not making fun of it at all. I'm merely doing a social commentary that if you look around you when this happens, everybody is 5 years old.
Yes.
It doesn't matter what it is. It could be a mini ball. It could be a T-shirt with the logo of a bank on it. Mm-hmm. It could be a plastic hot dog. It's free, and this is war. I will elbow you. I will kick a baby. I will spill my beer. I will spill your beer because I'm getting the GD mini ball mm-hmm. to take home to my kid mm-hmm. because I'm a good dad. Now, that's part of the game, and I totally get that. But my point is that happens. So when a foul ball is hit at you, everything else goes out. So from my point of view, Joey Votto, and I've watched it. I actually looked for this, and I didn't see it. If you're Joey Votto, you got to call the ball, man.
I was just going to say that.
You got to
call it. Fundamentals, Joe.
Got it. I got it. Hey,
it's me, Joey Votto.
Right. You've been here before. You know where the ball is. You've called for balls before. A fan does not have the ability to stop himself. If the fan was having a heart attack while the foul ball was in the air, the fan would not have the presence of mind to even clutch his chest.
Correct.
He's looking for the ball. You're Joey Votto. Call it.
If you were to imagine, I'm so glad you said that. I'm so glad you said that, because if you were to imagine like a little halo, if those the barriers, the fence
yes.
along the side, if it just went straight up infinitely in an invisible wall, that fan was not violating his space
at all.
He was not, like, there was nothing like, other than the fact that he kept Joey Votto from getting that ball, there was nothing in violation of the fan code. That ball was coming right to him. He was standing in perfect position. Listen, I would venture a guess, Dave, that 90% of, I'm going to say men on this because,
sure.
and you'll see why in just a second. I would venture guess that 90% of men, when they see a foul ball headed their way or a home run, there's a split second thought in their head that says, I'm going to get a contract.
Absolutely.
And even if that is shot down immediately because you know better, that's the first thought. I'm going to get a contract.
That's why Steve Bartman to me is, if you gave me the opportunity to create some stories in sports. I would love, one of my favorite things would be if the Cubs won the World Series this year, for Steve Bartman to throw out the first pitch next year. I have always felt so horrible for him because Steve Bartman did what any of us would have done.
Yep. How are you supposed to see the guy when you're looking up at the ball?
Moises, mm-hmm. Call the ball! I follow Alex Pavlovich on the Twitter machine, and you should too if you're a Giants fan. He does wonderful coverage of the Giants for CSN Bay Area. You can follow him, Alex Pavlovich, P-A-V-L-O-V-I-C. And he joins us right now from Philadelphia. Alex, it's Dave and Nate. Thanks for joining us this morning. How are you?
Good. How are you guys?
Oh, doing great. As a matter of fact, over the last half hour, we've been talking about a subject you were talking about last night. As I said in the intro, I follow you on Twitter. I saw you having a back and forth with a couple of fans about Bob Davidson last night. Alex, I completely agree with you. Here's what we were going over, though. And by the way, Alex said, hey, get out of here. Bob had every right to toss the fan. What, in your opinion, Alex, what's the line between, hey, I paid my ticket, I have a right to heckle, and I'm an obnoxious D-bag and I need to be thrown out?
You know, I completely understand the I paid my ticket. I think for me, the line is probably something that is really offensive, or maybe something kids shouldn't hear, maybe something somebody under the age of 12 or 13 shouldn't hear. So I don't know if you guys have read it on the air, but I just thought the innuendo last night. I mean, that's something, there were a ton of kids behind the Giants dugout, a bunch of 7 and 8 year olds sitting there waiting for autographs, and families that made a trip out here, and families that were trying to make this a good time. So I don't know that there's a need for that. You can tell a guy he sucks. You can do the old standbys, but when you get into what he got into last night, I'm totally fine with kicking a guy out.
Well, and we did read it on the air. We read Davidson's statement, and it really got goofy when the guy said he owned property at 69 Smith Street or whatever. And
yeah.
We all know the reference there. With fans in the news, and just to kind of sandwich this here, we were right before you came on talking about Joey Votto. And I personally, Alex, I feel bad. I understand why Votto was pissed, but I feel bad for fans because we all lose our minds and turn 4 years old as fans when a ball's coming towards us. Votto should have called for the ball or something. At the same time, are you okay with fans going for foul balls, or should they be more aware of their surroundings?
See, I mean, I'm on the other side of that. I think you have to be more aware. There's a sign right there in every ballpark, right in front of that seat, that says, you know, these balls are in play, and balls will come into the stands. Bats might come into the stands. I think you have to understand what's going on, and we see it at AT&T Park all the time. And, these are adults. That's, to me, where I draw the line. I think the thing with the umpire last night, the issue for me, I'm the oldest of 6 kids. I've taken a lot of little kids to the baseball game. So that's where I draw the line on that. And I think to see it, I don't know how old that guy was, 35, 40 years
yeah.
old. Who's fighting Joey Votto for a ball that's right there on the edge. You got to know better.
That's a good way to look at it. Come on, man. I'm 40 years old. You're fighting a grown man for a baseball. Maybe you ought to rethink things a little bit. So Alex Pavlovich joins us on KHTK. As we look at the Giants on the field, Alex, you know, I'm looking at these trade deadline moves, and it was really kind of uncharacteristic of the Giants, not just to trade their starting third baseman, but to kind of shuffle the clubhouse so much in a season where they really haven't struggled. But because of the way they've shuffled post-All-Star break, do you think that there's any credence to the idea that maybe there was a little bit of panic behind some of these moves?
No, I don't know that there was panic. I think, you know, first of all, we have to remember this is a Bobby Evans team now. It's not Brian Sabian. It's Bobby. And Bobby has a slightly different way of doing things. Not any better or any worse. I think him and the guys who are running it now a little bit more have a different way of doing things. And that's what we saw. I don't know that the Giants 3-4 years ago would have made a deal like this, but they are a little bit more aggressive now, I think, in finding creative options. And I do think that they're a little bit more aware of looking 2 or 3 years down the line at all times. So that, to me, was what was going on. I think these guys will be fine. It wasn't, to me, a panic move, but I think it was a reaction a little bit to the last couple of weeks and understanding by the front office that the team they put together was probably not good enough to win a World Series, especially because of the way that starting rotation was pitching.
Well, and Alex, too, to kind of go along with those trades, one of the guys they sent out was Phil Bickford, who their top pitching prospect by many measures. And a lot of fans are kind of upset about that. Now, the Giants haven't exactly had a lot of prospects go away and just blow up, but something in the last, I don't know, year or so has caused them to sour on Bickford a little bit. What do you think that was?
You know, I want to be careful here because I don't want to crush a guy on the way out, but I think Phil's standing as a prospect didn't quite match up to what a bunch of people in the industry, including the Giants, felt about him. I talked to some scouts yesterday or a couple days ago after this all happened, and just kind of with a little bit of surprise that Bickford, because I haven't seen him. I can only go off of what we hear and what prospect rankings say and what his numbers show, which have certainly been terrific. But just talking to some scouts who have seen him this year, both of them mentioned that they thought Adalberto Mejia was actually a better prospect that the Giants gave up. And I think the sense is that Tyler Beede is a better fit going forward. So Phil might go out there and become an ace. I mean, this is a guy who's drafted in the first round twice, so you never know. But I do think that maybe the concept of they gave away their top prospect, I'm not sure if that's totally true. I think on a lot of prospect lists, they gave away their top prospect, but I don't think the Giants actually felt that way.
Alex Pavlovich covers the San Francisco Giants for CSN Bay Area. You can check him out online at Alex Pavlovich, P-A-V-L-O-V-I-C. Get the spelling right, Dave. Giants, last night, I'm watching the game. They're in Philly. You got Bumgarner on the hill. He gets rocked. They're down six, and then all of a sudden they're clawing their way back. They go up by a run, and Alex, I'm sitting at home, and I'm thinking, this is it. This is the game that gets them off the schneid. They're going to win 12 of 13. It's a great comeback when your ace gets blasted. And then what do you know? This game was just absolutely crazy. And Will Smith comes in at one point. And to say his debut wasn't all he wanted it to be is probably an understatement. Talk a bit about the clubhouse and just where their brains are at right now after a loss like last night.
You know, I think they were actually okay. If this would have happened after, you know, if this would have happened before Saturday's game, I think it would have been really rough to handle. But the fact that they did go out there and beat the Nationals a couple times kind of righted these guys a little bit. And last night Bumgarner was off. It just happens. We see it two or three times a year where he's really off. And the Phillies are aggressive. They have a bunch of young guys who are out there not looking to walk, not working counts. They're up there hacking, and they got them early. And Bumgarner, even though there was an error in there, if Bum's going to walk out of there with eight runs on his line, it's pretty tough to win. So I think they understood last night, just a rare off night. I didn't sense really a lot of despair. And really, if you look at what happened in the eighth, I mean, certainly once Sergio Romo came into that game, it got out of hand. But Smith, he did strike out the first batter he faced. The next guy reaches on an infield single. I think he kind of dove over first base to get there and then gives up a hit. So I think they were okay for the most part with what happened.
Alex, last night was the first game really kind of after the big trades, and so I'm wondering how, as a group, did you see them adjusting in the clubhouse to the fact that they lost their starting third baseman and they brought in a pitcher that's likely to replace one of their veteran starters in the rotation? So taking out the fact that it was kind of a gut punch loss, do you see any lingering effects from the trades?
I don't. I talked to a bunch of the guys yesterday and especially made a point of talking to the other homegrown infielders, and certainly they were all a little bit crushed by losing Matt Duffy, not just as a player, but I think he was a friend. And, you know, I will say about Matt, I mean, he's one of the rare guys where everything you think about him is true. I mean, everything he had shown in terms of his work ethic and his demeanor and just the type of person he was, it's 100% true. So that is a loss in the clubhouse. But, look, Matt Moore came in there and right away was making his rounds and getting introduced, and guys were very welcoming of him. And we weren't there when Will Smith came in, but seeing him after the game and talking to him after the game, it seems like he's going to fit right in. So I think these guys fully understand it's a business, and this is just the way it goes. It'll hurt for a while, but I think once these guys get fully ingrained into the clubhouse, they're going to be okay.
Alex, Jake Peavy's 35 years old and has been an ace at points in his career. He gets popped into the bullpen after the trade, and he says, quote, too grateful to be hateful. He's a deadhead. He's got a good outlook. And that's something you may not see from some other pitchers in the league that maybe have Peavy's history. Did you expect Peavy to be the guy out? Samardzija has got extensive relief experience, and you also have Matt Cain in there as well, who's been up and down. Was Peavy the guy you thought would be targeted?
He was, and I think, you know, Samardzija, he just signed a 5-year, $90 million deal.
Yeah.
So if you're going to make that move eventually, maybe you do, but I don't know that you do it in year one. I think where do you go from there after that? It's pretty tough. So that I don't think was ever an option. Matt Cain, the other thing about him is it takes him longer to warm up, and he's the guy who has been dealing with a lot of injuries the last couple of years. Jake has been through his things too, but I think with Cain, you're looking at an arm injury and a hamstring, and it just would have taken too long, I think, for him to adjust to being a bullpen guy. So for now, it's going to be PV. I wouldn't be shocked if this changes back at some point. I think one thing about Jake that we've seen in the past is that he does usually benefit. Given how many pitches he's thrown in the majors and how many years he's been around, he does benefit from a little bit of a break. So if the Giants can avoid using him much in the next couple weeks, I wouldn't be shocked if they make a change at some point. But for now, Jake is to the bullpen, and like you said, he said all the right things.
You know, and Alex, I feel like the answer to this is probably obvious, but I want to try to see if I can get you to say it. I mean, is the idea behind, you know, adding that starter, moving, say, in this case, Peavy to the bullpen, you add Will Smith, too. Is the thought there that you've now added bullpen depth by being able to bump a starter back there?
I don't think so. I think in an ideal world, none of those guys are, maybe Samardzija is, but the other guys are not really fit for a bullpen. Jake Peavy's made one relief appearance in his career. So I don't think that fits into this at all. He really just fills in there for Albert Suarez or a Matt Reynolds, somebody who would come in at the front end of the game. But I think the main thing here is just getting a Matt Moore, somebody who was finished ninth in the Cy Young voting 3 years ago, had Tommy John. They do think that the young guy would be around for at least the next 3 years and be right there behind Madison.
Alex, excuse me, as I turn my mic on, I understand with the Giants' history, and we can get past the even year thing and all that, but with the Giants' history, there isn't a lot of panic. But there, you could look at this and say, man, after the All-Star break, they have just exploded. Yet it seems like as you're talking about them, you hear the players talk about anyone who's close to the team, I have yet to hear one person say, guys, we got to figure this out. This is horrible. Something is seriously wrong. And we have not been good. It almost seems like this team could, rather than having lost 7-10, won 7-10, and you're hearing the same stuff out of them.
Yeah, that's what they do. I mean, it's hard to kind of convey that, I think, sometimes to the outside, because fans by definition, are there to panic. And even in the middle of a game, I mean, there were people last night in the second inning freaking out. And like you mentioned earlier, before you know it, they're tied. So it is something where I think on the outside it's hard to understand at times, but it's a long season. It's a grind for these guys. They understand that. They understand that there's a bigger picture here, and you're going to have these stretches. Jake Peavy says it all the time. You're never as good as you think you are. You're never as bad as you think you are. And I think that's the attitude in there, and the fact that so many of those guys have at least one ring, some of them have three or four, I think makes them understand that something that happens in the middle of July is not indicative of your whole season.
Last thing for you, Alex. Hunter Pence has rejoined the team, almost like they acquired him at the trade deadline as well. And we've heard about his effect, not just on the field, but maybe more importantly in the clubhouse. You've been up close with him, watching him. How does he look on the field? Does he look completely back? And just talk a little bit about that effect he has on the clubhouse.
Yeah, he looks back to me. I think we've seen, you know, we saw it in his first at bat. I mean, that was a classic Hunter Pence at bat, just swinging from the heels and even falling down a little bit because he swings so hard. But I think he does look back. As far as the clubhouse goes, it's like what I said with Matt Duffy. Everything you believe from the outside is true. I mean, he is unlike anybody I've ever met in terms of his positivity and the way he goes about his business every single day. I mean, every time this guy gets hurt, he views it as an opportunity to somehow get better. So I think he really is unlike anybody else. And the energy he brings is something they miss. I think there are certain players in there, veteran guys even, who just react to him and just react to him being around the clubhouse and being there before a game. So it will make a difference. I think it made a difference over the weekend. Certainly there was a different vibe around the clubhouse on Saturday and Sunday. Now they have to go out there and win. It's not going to be like that as you continue to play the way they have the last couple weeks. But it generally makes a huge difference on that clubhouse.
Nice enough in Philadelphia to join us and give us a Giants update. Alex Pavlovich covers the Giants for CSN Bay Area. You can read him there. And also, if you're a Giants fan, a phenomenal follow on Twitter at Alex Pavlovich. We appreciate the time. Have a good trip, and we'll talk to you soon, Alex.
All right, guys. Thank you.
Thanks,
Alex.
And, you know, really, and somebody said on the text line, know, the Giants must be kicking ass lately. The sky is so high on them. And I kind of understand what that person's saying. It really isn't. You know, fans are going to freak out a little bit, and they have every right to. I'm freaking out a little bit. I'm a fan. But, yeah, you talk to – you hear from the players, people that cover them, that are with them, and they're like, yeah, yeah, you know.
It happens.
You got to lose
it's
them some
baseball.
Way. Yeah. Nobody goes 162-0. At some point, you're like, oh, okay, but –
But when? Like, when do you start saying, yeah, we better get it together?
Yeah.
I mean, is that mid-August? Is it late August? Is it? Are you just fine as long as you're on top of the division?
Yeah. It leads down to two.
That's got to be a big part of it, though.
I think so. I think it's a huge psychological part. I'll tell you this much. I think when that happens is when they when and if the Dodgers catch them. I think that's when the panic button gets hit.
Mm-hmm.
You see the Dodgers at with or even ahead. And now all of a sudden it is panic time and all bets are out. We got a whole new ball game if that happens.
Hey.
Yeah, we'll take a break. We'll come back. Let's switch gears, huh, as we roll through the NFC West. We dealt with the Arizona Cardinals yesterday. We'll deal with the, and we're dealing with all of them, Seahawks tomorrow. Dave Softy Mahler is going to join us. You may remember him yammering about the Sonics and Kings and all that was going on. He actually covers the Seahawks probably more than anything. Like he, because there's no Supersonics to cover. That makes sense. He will join us, and then Friday we do the Niners. Lindsay Theory of the LA Times comes on with us next to talk about the newly minted Los Angeles Rams with that fresh football team smell to them already. Right here on The Drive, Sports 1140 KHDK.